welcome you to the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board, the public meeting on November 6th, 2019. We have an individual that I'd like to acknowledge from the Ark of Clark County.
Ark of Southwest Washington.
I'm sorry, Ark of the United States. And I'm sorry, I forgot your first name.
Kelly.
Do you happen to have a last name?
I do, it's Johnson. I will spell the easy way.
Kelly, would you please address us and introduce yourself?
Absolutely. So I've been at the ARC for 13 days. And previous to that, I was at Open House Ministries. And previous to that, I was at CBAP, where I just went down and visited some friends right before coming up here. Mm-hmm. I also worked as an administrator at St. Joseph Catholic Church for 10 years, one of the biggest parish in the Archdiocese. And that's from 95 to 2005, along with a lot of other archdiocesan and experience over on the Portland side, and construction and other businesses that I've managed. So I've been working for 40 years. I'm tired.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really excited to take this role.
Great. Do any of the board members have a question for Kelly? Or two or three?
I thought she was going to sit quietly in the background.
Does any public have any questions for Kelly?
How's it going?
Very busy. It is. This is really relieved to get our Thanksgiving boxes lined up today with Darla, so happy about that. And I have a lot of fiscal management, and unfortunately, Juanita, if you know Juanita, her husband passed away Sunday, so now I am all deep in the program management too, and just the day-to-day nuts and bolts.
Well, thank you.
Came at a good time.
Yes.
We needed you. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Any other public comments? Seeing none, hearing none, we'll move on to Michelle with Department of Vocational Rehabilitation.
Hi, good evening. I'm Michelle Mulhern. I am the supervisor for the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation here in Vancouver. I oversee the services both in Clark and Skamania County. We have a team of about almost a dozen folks in our office providing services, including counselors and rehab technicians, and a business specialist and a regional transition consultant. So I'm hoping to provide an update for you tonight. I believe I was asked to talk about order of selection and pre-employment transition services, and also just give you a little update as far as some interesting fun facts about things that are going on at DVR, if you're interested.
Please do.
Sure. So I'll start off with order of selection. DVR began releasing 200 individuals per month beginning September 1st from our wait list. So we've been in an order of selection since November 1st of 2017. If you're familiar, regulation requires DVR programs to enter an order when they do not have enough resources to provide the full range of services to all eligible individuals. So we entered an order of selection and have had, at that time, we have all categories except one closed. So we serve priority category one. And we were able to begin serving priority category two in September. So 200 folks per month. For the Vancouver office, it means about 8 to 10 cases. We're able to serve 8 to 10 individuals. That's our average release. There is no a number that is dictated other than the number that an individual falls in the order. So we could get more. But right now, that's about our average, is 8 to 10 per month. We are currently kind of doing a reset. Do you have any questions about order of selection?
I think you need to explain how that works. Most states, a lot of states are in this situation.
So over half of the VR programs in the nation operate under an order of selection. I know way more about order of selection than probably you want to hear, so let me know when you want me to stop. So I could probably bore you to death. But an order of, some states operate under an order of selection at all times. What that does is it allows a program to open and close as capacity allows. So resources can be financial resources, it can be staffing capacity, it can be a lot of different things. So some states operate under an order at all times and have all categories open. Some then can close one or two categories depending on resource availability. We operated without an order of selection for years. When the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act was signed in 2014, we've always been a core program under WIA, the Workforce Investment Act. But the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act encompassed all of the main titles under the Workforce Development System and required VR to submit a portion of the combined state plan for the Workforce Development System. So we submitted a portion of that plan to the Workforce Education Training Coordinating Board. If you don't have an order of selection within your plan, you can't enter into one. So before we entered into an order, we had to amend our portion of the state plan so that we could enter an order. So now that we have that in place, we are able to be more flexible in our ability to serve individuals as capacity allows and resources allow.
A couple things happened in that workforce investment. It required DVR to put 15% of its budget into youth.
Yes, so in 2014 when WIOA was signed, it said VR needed to set aside 15% of their program funds. So we received, we're about an 80-20 match. We get 80% of our funding from the Rehabilitation Services Administration under the Department of Ed, and about 20% state match. And it required us of those funds to set aside 15% to serve students who, as defined by our state, are age 14 to 21. And so.
But you can't get them a job. In the law, it says you can't get a job.
It's interesting how it states, so there are five required, under the law, there are required services. So the five services that you must provide, those direct services, are job exploration counseling, exploration of post-secondary opportunities, self-advocacy, work readiness training, and work-based learning. Under work-based learning, it can be paid work-based learning. It just cannot be under that pre-employment transition service, because it's pre-employment, it's giving students an early start at job exploration and giving them opportunities to try out work. So you're right, in the typical sense of long-term employment, it's not the intention. It's the intention is to get students who are being served under IEPs or 504s or otherwise regarded as having a disability an early start at thinking about jobs and what does work look like. So it can be job site tours, it can be informational interviews, it can be job shadows, all of those are work-based learning. But then the paid work-based learning component does have like a short-term criteria attached to it. It's not for long-term employment. Pardon?
What is the length of that short-term?
You know, I can't think off the top of my head right now. We contract for work-based learning experiences, and I think at the top end it might be about 6 weeks, because the idea is to try out multiple different types of jobs and be paid while you're trying them out.
And actually, Dave Hank and I looked at the VR report across the country, and our VR is doing much better. Some places they're just doing counseling check. Done. So, you know, in Washington, they're at least they've got a good plan for what they have to do, but it doesn't fit Washington as well as it could have if we, you know, Puget Sound area in particular is doing school to work, and they couldn't, VR couldn't use that as an outcome. But they're doing much better than most of them across the country.
It is definitely a struggle across the nation to really have programs get their feet under. some are doing it, but then they're finding out that what they're doing isn't allowable because it doesn't meet the criteria that's been established, and there's a lot of stopping and starting as programs are trying to figure it out. So same here. I mean, we went forward. We had lots of contracts across the state. What we realized, the program, the person who was in charge at that time, kind of let those contracts look very different depending on where they were and how they were established, which is very difficult to manage if you've ever managed contracts. So when you have 26 unique contracts and you're trying to monitor them and figure them all out, you can imagine what that might look like. So there was a reset, and the executive leadership team met, and we came together. That was my old job. And we came together, and we were able to then say, we're going to start out and contract for two services and let our staff provide the ones that we know how to do well. So in-house, we provide job exploration counseling. We provide self-advocacy counseling, including benefits planning, financial literacy training, and we can provide exploration and post-secondary opportunities. We contract out for work-based learning. So again, not just paid work-based learning, but also those job site tours, informational interviews, and job shadows. And we also contract for work readiness training. So teaching students about, you know, what are employers looking for? What happens when you're working and there's a wide variety of people in the workplace? And how do you interact with different people? And those types of things. In Clark County, we contract with our local Workforce Southwest, our Workforce Development Council. They run a summer works program out of the Next Youth One Stop over at the Stone Mill area where the workforce is. There's a Next Center really close by. They run those. The summer works program, I believe this summer served 153 students. They started off with at least 153 enrolled. They went out and networked with 11 different school districts that recruited from 23 different schools across Clark County and Cowlitz and Wakayatha. This is Clark County, Cowlitz and Wakayatha. So Workforce Southwest covers all of that area. So they were able to start the summer works program. They will be doing it again next summer and hope to double that number.
Do we know how many students with higher acuity are participating in that versus individuals that might be on a 504 or something?
So I would say that probably it's a low number. And the reason why is because those students are more likely to be served on an open case with DVR and receive those one-on-one with a community rehabilitation program. So not only are we contracting with the larger through the larger group of potentially eligible students, those who are eligible and being served at DVR, then are also receiving those same services through contracted services with the community rehabilitation program when it's identified. So our counselors are signing service plans for job shadow, informational interviews, job site tours, things like that. Let's see, any questions? We contract here with our WDC, but across the state we also contract with ESDs and community colleges. So we do have some other models of that type of service delivery. One of the requirements is that we look to identify the need across the state for these services. And before we were using QIS data from CCTS, and now we're going to be launching what's called the TSAT, which is the, I believe it's the Transition Service Assessment Tool. The state of Oregon also utilized a similar model. We are contracting with Dr. Marcus Poppin out of Washington State University Pullman, and he helped develop this online survey that will be launched to schools across the state, I believe beginning next week.
All school districts?
I believe so, yes. Our transition, secondary transition program manager is coordinating that with Dr.
And what is the goal of the survey? What do they hope to learn or?
Well, it's a needs assessment to kind of just gather information to see where the gaps are in service and availability and accessibility to these types of services throughout schools. So under IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Schools are required to provide a lot of these types of services, but don't always have the same resources to do so. And so we're going in to look at the gaps and seeing if we can come in and fill those gaps.
So who's actually taking that survey then? Is it the students, the staff, the families?
It is not families. It is going to be, I believe, the special ed directors or the special ed teachers if they get sent that from the special ed directors.
So how can we ensure the fact that the families and the consumers' voice is also heard?
That's a great question for Tammy Doyle, our secondary transition program manager. Yeah, it's a great question.
Contact us to let us know, please?
Yes. I will also say that, well, the TSAT, that she would have to be able to answer that. Yeah.
Sure.
I'll make a note of it.
I'm just concerned that we're only focused in on the professionals that serve instead of also the families.
Sure.
Well, concerns. And my concern would be that if IDEA says the school district has to provide it, if I'm a special ed director, I'm not going to put on a survey in writing that we're not providing it, because I've been admitting that we're not following federal law or state law. So there seems to be kind of a disconnect there.
We've been able to identify, at least in our pencil and paper assessments, where there are areas that are that have gaps. But DVR is not allowed to supplant. We can only supplement the services. So if they are already providing it, it isn't something that we would come in and do. But if it's identified as an opportunity, we would certainly look to go in and fill that need.
I guess the one thing that would be helpful, at least from my perspective, is to hear what is learned from the survey.
Yes.
That would be very helpful.
My understanding, pardon?
Can you come back with that?
Of course. My understanding is that the survey results should be available at the beginning of next year. I think that they had hoped to originally launch this in October, so that might be pushed out a smidge, but maybe February, March-ish, I'm guessing.
Maybe March?
Yeah. So I'll ask Tammy for sure when that might be available.
March 20th.
So you're integrating, yes, or talking to the schools and the people that are in those transition programs, with the teachers and things, to identify students?
That has been the practice in the past by going in with a pencil and paper survey. Either the transition consultant, the program manager, or the counselor, if the opportunity were to arise, yeah.
But now the special ed director might be doing that?
Well, I know that's who's, I believe that's who's been identified as who it's being sent to.
Oh, yeah.
And then, I think, yeah, you know, we have to have a because it's difficult, I will tell you. Like, for a smidge, I was a regional transition consultant. It was my transition, no pun intended, employment before I got into the role that I have today from when I left the state office. And, you know, the exercise of trying to identify who is doing what at every school is a difficult task. It is no type, the titles are not consistent, the websites are not consistent, OSPI doesn't even have all the high schools that we have always listed. It is like surprising how much disconnect we have in information. And when I attempted to actually identify who all of my points of contact would be in that short period of time, it seems like I wouldn't actually know unless I went to every single school and, you know, are you the person? Are you the person I'm supposed to talk to? Because it was very difficult through online information to be able to know.
So I need to call a meeting with the special ed directors. Do you want me to ask?
Do I want to ask?
I'll just ask them.
Well, ask them if they, I would say after, if you are having a meeting soon, I would ask them after next week if they received it. I'd love to know that personally. Okay. So I want to know where it's going, and if it's not going to them, then we need to make sure, yeah.
I'm always amazed of the lack of coordination of all this stuff in a modern country. I think our third world country sometimes.
So fragmented.
You know, it is definitely a challenge. I will say that in Washington, my understanding has been over time that the way that our school districts are run, we have a lot of local control. So OSPI doesn't always have the influence that they might have in other states. And so you find regulation written for someone who's a regulation kind of buff, you read regulation and you say, oh, that would be great if our state didn't run like this, because I don't know how that's going to work here. And so, you know, it is definitely interesting when you have to kind of take high-level implementation and actually implement at the local level.
What happens is it goes like this between OSPI and a district sometimes. Not always. Sometimes they're just trying to get along and figure it out together. Right. But
yeah, and to think for a minute, like, I think in the ideal regulatory world, they'd love for us to have agreements with every school district, because that is how we operate. But imagine the enormity of that task, to have an agreement with every school district.
Well, let's start here in Clark County. Yeah. It's smaller, it's manageable, it's forward-thinking.
It's true. I just think, I mean, of how every district works differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what she did.
Yeah.
And as a parent, if I would have been on this board since my son was 7 and now he's out of high school, I would have never heard of DVR. Only in here did I hear of DVR. Never, years and years and years of IEPs, no one ever mentioned it to me.
So, and our goal is to be more connected with schools. We are working hard to establish relationships. So we have a new, that's another piece of my update. We have the new regional transition consultant is Sarah Fiedler. She comes to us from the state of Colorado. She's a returning Washingtonian. She served for their VR program as well as South Dakota, I believe, for a bit. And her last name is Fiedler, F-I-E-D-L-E-R. Okay. And Sarah is going out and making those connections. DVR is making an effort to attend IEPs when invited. So the school has to know about us, right? And we are establishing relationships with schools. We understand that IEP meetings happen at the same time every year. They happen annually. And so what we're asking is that educators are reaching out to us at the beginning of the year when they know when those IEPs are coming and get on our calendars, because our counselors schedule out way in advance. And what has happened historically is teachers call when they have a meeting that week or next week, and we're solidly booked. Right. And it's difficult when you schedule back-to-back appointments to try to figure out how to get to that, you know, school and meet. And we want to be there, we just need more lead time, so it's
right. You'd probably, I mean, almost do best to, summer's not a great time, but the end of the school year or something. I know that, you know, people change jobs, but not in the fall, because they're all just crazy.
Overwhelmed, certainly. So this summer we did attend the transition forum that was held in Yakima and sponsored by CCTS. And we did work DVR, work to meet all of our counterparts from schools who attended. I would say that is a challenge, getting teachers to those types of events too, so that they can meet DVR staff. But we did some really good work on troubleshooting, like, what is it that we need? What does the school produce with a student that would be really helpful for VR to know about them? Can we get a hold of their portfolio? Can we get a hold of assessments? Can we get, you know, those types of things? Because the teachers do their best to keep all of that together, but then we know it goes home when they leave, and then it might not make it to us, and they don't keep it.
And the transition training series is January navigating this?
Yeah, and maybe I can talk to someone about, oh no, we can't move that date, never mind. I don't know who's going to attend that. Helen usually does that, and she'll be out of country, and I'm already scheduled for leave, so we're going to have to find somebody to
You can work with Kristen on that.
Yeah.
Because VR usually comes with packets, which is lovely.
And we'll make sure that those get there. And if nothing else, maybe Sarah can come and present.
Right.
Sarah may be appropriate.
Yeah.
It would be a really good piece since it has to do with transition.
She's here.
Sarah is our local transition person, but you mentioned that Tammy Doyle.
Tammy Doyle is our statewide secondary transition program manager.
Okay.
So Sarah is one of two Region 3 regional transition consultants. Sarah serves ESD 112 and a portion of 113. So she goes as far east as Klickitat and as far west as Aberdeen and a little bit up north too. So she's got quite a territory. Yeah, that was mine. And I'm like, ooh, had it, Sarah. So it's a lot. But that's really what we're working on right now, is just kind of assessing those needs, doing that reset, just kind of getting our feet under us for the provision of these services, like every other program in the nation is working to do. Some side note, interesting fun fact updates. We have had an interim chief of field services. Paul Bertries took that position as an interim chief, and we are now openly recruiting for that position to fill. And
is Paul applying?
And I do not believe so.
Really? So what happens to the Alpha?
She will do something else, but I am not at liberty to say. And then Don Kay has announced his retirement. So Don is currently our chief of operations. He's been with the state for like 37 years, I believe. He was the recipient of the governor's Carolyn Blair Brown Memorial Award last year at the Governor's Committee on Disability and Employment Awards. He will be retiring on December 31st. And as I think I mentioned, I don't know, I am recruiting for a business specialist in Vancouver. Darlene Terry has left serving our office, and she's moved on for personal reasons, and so we are recruiting, and that position closes on November 17th.
You think that resume that I sent you?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can take a look at it.
So they have to go through the careers.wa.gov.
The what?
The careers.wa.gov. That is where you'll find this posting for the business specialist in Clark County. They have to complete a state online application. I believe they have to submit a resume, letters of reference, and maybe something else. I can't remember.
Yeah. Okay.
So please, if you have some candidates that you think are appropriate, I left it open for a bit of time, so it closes on the 17th. Please let me know that I'm recruiting.
Any further questions from the board? Is there anything else you'd like to add, Michelle?
No, just I'll be back with information, and I'll share Tammy's. I'll let Tammy know your interest in.
Very much.
In family input. I don't know that she'll be able to include that by the release of the TSAT next week, but I can certainly encourage her to think about that for her future.
It's very important for us that all groups have some type of say in what services are provided and how they're provided. That's very important.
Great. Well, thank you for that feedback. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me here today.
Sure. Thanks for your report.
Yeah.
Darla, do you have something for us regarding peace?
Well, we don't have an actual legislative update, which is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right. What's going on so that they can do the legislative?
Okay, so when we are talking on a state level and we're talking about the things that need to be addressed this year, one of the first things that everybody is talking about, and we actually are maybe getting a little bit of traction around, is forecasting. And so for those of you who may not know, forecasting is something that happens with the schools, it happens with senior services, it happens with most services, but it is not happening with intellectual and developmental disabilities for our DDA clients. Which means for every new client that comes in, unless we happen to have a client that leaves for whatever reason, we have to go advocate for new dollars. And I'm getting tired. And we've been advocating for the same thing year after year after year after year. And while our legislators have been generous to us, at some points they have not kept up with the growth. And so we are somewhere between 39th and 41st funded in the state per capita for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And we have one of the most complicated systems in the nation for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and families to try to navigate. So,
who are we?
We, the developmental disabilities community.
Of Clark County?
No, of Washington State.
So you're looking at forecasting.
So we're looking at forecasting. The other thing that we're looking at is, as we all know, minimum wage is going up substantially. As minimum wage goes up, that puts a significant hindrance on our residential programs, our employment programs, all of our programs, because those funds do not automatically go up unless we go and get additional, we being the advocates, go and get the legislature to give us additional dollars. So we'll have to serve fewer people if we have the same amount of money. And so I was talking to someone today, and they served 45 people in residential with, and it cost them $5 million. And just the thought of that just is incredible.
Well, we've had the same rate for for employment agencies for the last 10 years. We can't pay any more than what we are. So that a lot has happened in 10 years. One is the new family leave thing that started in January.
FERPA, and whatever it is.
Some of the health care costs, and there's some other costs. So residential is in a crisis in the Puget Sound area, and it gets that way here too. We also have the third most expensive residential system in the country. So I just hope that now that we've got Amy in central office, that some of Amy will like spill out into the world. That's my hope. Employment, we don't want to become the problem that residential has. If we continue to have no thought about increasing the rates,
and as
we're allowed to pay,
as minimum wage goes up, the rate that we pay our employment vendors needs to go up substantially, because we're not going to attract and maintain good quality, skilled, trained, supported employment vendors and employees if we can't pay them. If they're skilled enough to go get other people a job, they're skilled enough to go get themselves a better job. So we really need to keep that wage up there for those purposes, because it's highly important.
Right, and we are now competing with teacher types and business graduates to be job employment specialists.
But your budgets are not good.
Right.
No.
In the early days when there was sheltered work, you could interchange residential and employment, or sheltered work staff. If somebody, we had to just keep talking to the state, so we didn't have a difficult employee going between us, but they could go between us, and the skills were not that much different. Now they're a significantly different.
A respite provider who is working for SEIU as a personal care provider who has the maximum number of hours in can make more money providing respite and personal care than they can being a supported employment vendor or a residential vendor. So, I mean, that's just, because they have the union who's going in and doing bargaining for their wages. It's, and so we need to be able to keep up with that.
Can I just clarify something? So you're saying that we should try to advocate for higher vendor rates for employment and training, is that correct?
Yes, and for forecasting.
Right, yeah.
Forecasting, but good or not good. I've heard both around forecasting. It's good to do, and then I've heard it's not good to do. I can't remember who said it.
I've never lived in a world where DDA was forecasted, so I can't
It's not a personal experience that I bring to the table.
Joe Tavelli forecasted transition students, but he didn't have them attach money to it. So it was kind of a courtesy forecast. And
that's what the issue is. That's the issue of asking for forecasting that would then have a fiscal note attached to it versus asking for this courtesy forecast. And I think
we don't want a courtesy forecast. We want a real forecast where, yeah, the dollars are attached per person so that as we have more and more people coming in, the per capita numbers don't continue to drop.
So that's a little complicated. Then what, do you have anything else before? Okay.
Sorry. I mean, I could probably jump in the future, but I do have a, so the Joint Legislative Executive Committee on Aging and Disability has reconvened, and so they're actually, Senator Randall is over that now, and they're actually going to be having a couple listening sessions in November, one on the 13th and one on the 18th, and I will email this information to Mary. So that is also a good place because the legislature is maybe hearing us that there is a huge problem. And there's some things that we're going to have to either fix or stop doing.
You said the 18th and the 13th?
Yes. And I can email that information out. The DD one, the DD community will be held on Wednesday, November the 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. This meeting will be located at the Tacoma Community Center. Oh, it's Representative Randall, not Senator Randall, sorry. Representative Randall's legislative assistant who will follow up with the room number and parking passes. I can get you information and I can also get you a way to provide information without being there if you're interested.
It's what?
It's for everything.
Okay.
It's the board.
It's the board or for everyone?
Well, these are the last years. I don't know if the, I don't know if you guys want to see last year's and the year before our legislative agenda. Oh, you? Okay. Because it's not, it's public information.
Well, just, I would always say, transition's important, employment's important, and don't ever forget the babies because we got, you know, you start with employment when they're teeny, teeny, tiny, not crawling yet.
Now that's an entitlement. So the babies are now an entitlement. So we don't have to go off and say, do something. We just have to work with our community to find them all. So what Kristen is writing up here is the Association for County Human Services legislative agenda, which looks very much like your past two, except it doesn't have housing on it.
Housing's huge.
So when I'm looking at this, the bullet points of contributing to employment, transition, and housing, is that reflected by the policy? I'm trying to understand, you're saying that they're comparable, but...
Yeah, these are pretty much the same. They're similar. We just, you wanted me to repackage it last year, so mm-hmm. I did. So it looks different, but it really is kind of the same.
What you really expanded in terms of position?
That was at your request.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you have
Well, yeah. So, housing, we continue. Now, Darla and I are working on some housing things, and that was not clear for me. What we want is housing options.
So,
but I don't know that we want to go beat the bushes for infrastructure.
Right. So, the difference is housing or residential.
Right.
Right. And we need more affordable housing, and we need new and creative residential models that currently do not exist because the current residential models were created in the 70s and 80s for individuals who did not have the opportunity to go to school and really are not being very successful for very many of our individuals with disabilities at this point in time. Like our 24/7 residential programs where you've got four people in a home and you've got a staff coming in and 8-hour shifts, and who you live with is dependent upon
where they put you.
Where they put you, yeah.
Choose your roommate.
Or an adult family home where you not only have roommates that might be four or six roommates, but oftentimes you have a housemate. But you oftentimes have a roommate. You have to share your bedroom with somebody that you don't know, as well as your house.
Are you talking about adult family? Yeah.
And so that's really, we really have some disconnects with our residential programs, and we have a very small, large shortage of affordable housing for everybody.
Yeah. That's for everybody. That is not a disability issue. That is a West Coast issue.
It is, but the disability income tends to be significantly lower than the low income.
But we are meeting with the DHA on Friday, Darla and I, because she did a survey. We've been getting housing reports this last year, and she did a survey, and so we're going to do some brainstorming with the DHA. And then Darla and Amy and I wrote a little, and David and Amy wrote a little white paper on housing options, because his experience with the rest of the country and our listening to what people wanted is kind of different than what's traditionally been delivered. I don't know how to explain that in a legislative, not even close.
I don't either. And then I'm meeting with some central office chiefs because there used to be some internship programs where the college students would work at our RHCs in exchange for their rent. Well, we know for the college students that housing is also an issue. Well, they no longer can do that on our RHCs, and I'm trying to figure out a way that we can use those college students and internships to support individuals living in the community around housing. And one of the other things that we've talked about is, could we get some student loan reimbursements to entice people to come into the workforce for IDD.
Yeah, and those are, I don't think, this is not a budget session.
No, we're
not. So I don't know about the housing thing now, but for this session.
And they repealed a bunch of the taxes that the legislature.
Did they, are we sure they passed?
Well, there's some that maintain, but there was as many or more that was repealed.
Those voters.
Yeah.
Just this latest one?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they already counted.
Well, they're counting right now.
Huh? I thought those were advisory votes.
They are advisory votes, but what that means going forward. Let's just hope they don't take our money.
Yeah. Now you've got to worry about that. And translate.
Right. I guess one of the questions that right now is I'm not sure of the next steps. I look down here and I see the legislative agenda and I see mining. And I'm going, okay, I have my way.
Well, you four get to make that decision. You're a majority.
I understand. But I'm also looking at, there appears to be an issue that we need to encourage our representatives to support forecasting so that there's a reliable source of knowledge, at least, about what the need's going to be in the future, and just not, you know, status quo, not just status quo. I'm also seeing the ramifications of the lack of increase in what we can pay the employment vendors, and in turn to be able to retain the good ones. And then I'm looking down below there where it has our typical employment, transition, and housing. And I'm somewhat concerned that there seems to be a lot of things we're asking for, and I'm not sure what our priority is. And then when I'm looking at Trisha's face, She's giving me the look of a disgruntled.
No.
And so.
Scrunch nose.
You know, yeah. I hate to say it, just take a picture. But my point is how do we, the four of us, the people on the board, want to approach the legislative agenda that we'll share later this year with the legislators going to?
You know, I think that part of what sparked me for this, what Donna was saying, is that instead of this silo thing, looking to see how we can, and I know this legislator hate, but one thing, when you're talking about college students or helping somebody, to look and see what is available that we can blend, because dollars might be better.
They're not going to let you blend Medicaid dollars with private students, but I mean, you can, that's a policy change, not a funding thing, and that can be done if people can work on that without going making it a big deal in the legislation.
Okay, great.
And even, I mean, I think this is one you just kind of keep it simple, keep it straightforward.
Well, I don't know. It's every year it gets bigger, and our needs certainly haven't gone down.
Right.
So we.
Do we go back?
What do you do? Yeah.
We can go back to something simpler, and then have talking points for you all. And certainly, you can add the wage, you can add the rate increase in here. That's just a bullet.
Yeah.
That's just a bullet under employment.
And what Kristen wrote up here is really good, and that bottom point about provide employment supports for high school transition students, ensure that all high school grads are able to get a basic plus waiver, mm-hmm. right? That there's a lot of disagreement on whether or not we have enough funding in this biennium to provide basic plus for our high school grads. And that is the minimum that needs to happen for transition for those students to be able to go and have employment. And for all of those taxpayer dollars that we have invested into that individual for the 21 years prior to be able to be manifested into the maximum commitment to the society. So how do we
there
do that?
There has been enough transition availability because the silver tsunami is running through developmental disabilities just like it is every other place. Mm-hmm. And so there has been enough so that they've been able to meet those needs. Until they haven't.
If you don't do this, then I don't believe this, but it's kind of like, why are we educating? If we can't get them to the next step, what, you know, we put all this time and effort in, to what avail? In my
we used to give them a number of how much it costs to educate a student 0 through 21, and if you don't engage with something in about 3 weeks, the people's abilities kind of start to deteriorate. That's why they do so much remediation at school, right? Mm-hmm. Because people start losing things. I don't think we need to do that anymore. People are very supportive of transition, but mm-hmm. the first time you leave it off, they'll take it off.
Yep.
Well, the other thing to remember is that the graying tsunami is hitting everywhere. And so we have a lot of new and young representatives that may not have this knowledge and information that our past representatives have had. You know, they were very well educated. And with all of these new young representatives that we have coming, we also have a huge turnover, or we're going to have a huge turnover in our state level advocacy as well. And so we're going to have a lot of new people coming up there as well. So that's just something to kind of watch. I don't know.
Now, is this a document that you give to people and then they leave?
Well, you talked to them. You've done this.
But when I'm saying this, then, you know, for this looks more attractive to someone who's got to read 50 of these than this.
Yeah.
And for the old timers, they know what you're talking about. For the new timers, they don't. So you have two pages, and you have just this on one, and you put all the bullet points on the other for those who need it.
We could do that.
Because otherwise it
would
clutter the whole thing.
Or double sided.
Yeah, but what I mean is and then you say see back.
Yeah,
I don't know, it just makes it simpler. I don't know if you gotta read up a bunch of them, because otherwise you look at it and says, oh god, they're just adding. And you already know the kid. I don't know, I'm just talking. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking content. I'm just talking presentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The same points each year. It seems as if, and if you took other legislative agendas going back further, I think you'd find these a lot of times these same three, if not one's out and something else is in, but two of these three are going to be on everything. So.
And we want those three. And we
some
want
years
big was, letters.
Some years are playing prominent.
Rather, you know, this is bigger letters.
Budget funding cuts. We're just asking to maintain the status quo in some years. And
well, then, again, this isn't a budget year, so maintaining makes sense because they didn't cut last time. And this time, with the rollback of certain taxes and we're going to be clearing, you know, things are at risk. So we don't have very much state-only money left in the system, but the people that we support on state-only money are people who are working a lot of hours and they still need the support. So
yes, they do.
And Ted is accurate. I mean, if a legislator can look at it and glance and get it, that's really good. Because oftentimes they don't have more time than that to sit and absorb it. You want them to be able to look at it and just be able to have it.
Yeah. Well, we can do two. We can make it where we can do is very similar and just add a couple things, and you can talk about forecasting. I mean, that's a separate talking point.
Meredith, I'd like to hear your opinions.
I think it really has value because your own ones are going to get it, but I really think you're right. We need to do more education with the young ones because they don't have the history, you know, and they've had services in the schools, so what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is it's not, you know, transitioning to adult.
Right. So you give them an opportunity to study, but you don't bore the people already know.
Right. Yeah.
So if I'm hearing correctly, what the board members would like is almost a replication of this particular style, the very direct to the point with, you know, our ability to explain when we meet with them face to face about forecasting, which seems to make sense when you're talking about next year is a budgetary year. So, you know, this is something that you want to have the facts because you're going to be making some budgetary decisions. And then also under employment is we need to keep up to keep the best and the brightest.
So,
I think change this creative housing. I like that. I like you said the residential options instead of housing options, right?
They're very different. So housing is brick and mortar, the physical place they live, and residential is that.
Yeah. Should include the residential.
I can say housing and residential.
Because they have both those words in there is important.
You want me to add the word residential?
Mm-hmm. Residential here instead of housing residential.
No, two different things.
I know, but well.
You want them both.
And residential.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you have housing and residential here. This housing.
But I can make both, and that's two different things.
But again, just what? Housing slash resident?
I can do that.
The key thing is.
You can talk it through.
We're no longer homeless, we're houseless.
If you could please make those any changes and then send it to the rest of the members that aren't here today. As well, but do the the three of you agree that we are comfortable with giving that direction to staff with regards to prepare a draft for final approval vis-a-vis.
You mean it approved here.
That's why they get the big bucks.
Right. I guess where I'm coming from right now are the three of you comfortable enough to say that we are going to prepare something like this, that it will be prepared by your staff, and that whatever you come up with, we'll agree with. That will be our legislative agenda. Because we don't have time, because next month is December,
right,
to be able to meet again to vote on it. And it has to be a public meeting, and that won't occur until January. And the legislator influencing window is, clamping shut, okay? So.
But it's the same topic that we're putting on.
The same topic.
Correct, yeah.
I guess the key thing is keep it simple.
Yeah.
Simple, direct, so that it can be read very quick.
Can I have?
Please.
Thank you. One recommendation is, I'm on looking at the.
Let's wait till we can.
I'm looking at the 2018, and this where it says people with disabilities who work, and then it's got some bullet points. That's lovely. I just want to add to that, when we're in a workforce shortage, people who experience disabilities who are in our workforce expand our workforce so that more of our needs can be met, and I think that needs to, if we're going to have something like that, that needs to be added in there. We need them in our workforce right now. We always do, but.
Now, is that something that has to be written down, Darla?
No, you guys can say it.
Communicate vis-a-vis based on.
Yeah, and we can put it in the longer one, and then, so, but you can say it in the shorter one.
Okay.
And I can collapse these two,
or you can contribute to the tax base and general employment pool. Put them a couple together like that, because otherwise,
I will wordsmith this. You have to agree on
take away this long one.
Right. I believe that we have total agreement that employment, transition, and then housing are the three main points. Is that correct? Okay. Do I have a motion to codify this, please? Ted, you moved.
I'll move.
Yeah. I'll
second.
Okay. Discussion. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
You.
Abstain. Okay. So we have that has been given to you, Mary, to finalize.
Actually, we are having lunch on the 15th, and you've got till then to think about your edit. And we will work on it together.
That's perfect. That is perfect. Thank you, Ted, for your volunteers.
Yes.
That's
good.
Let's table that.
Okay. You and I are going to work on this tomorrow. Yes, we are.
Jeez. Yeah.
Where's the gavel?
Gavel them!
Gavel.
I gave it back to you.
It's actually in our silver drawer. Okay. Can we have a brief October event debrief? I wasn't able to make it to the last one.
I think it gets better every year. And I really like the fact that we have people that are employed doing a lot more of it. I think that's really strong, and I thought they did a great job this year.
The event that they had was outstanding.
The movie event was also
good job.
And so I wasn't able to
explain it too. He wanted to come.
I couldn't make it because I'm not allowed to have popcorns in someone that's keto.
Oh, well, I don't know if there was a lot of popcorn, but so Temple Grandin spoke. Mm-hmm. She was awesome, as she is. She spoke for an hour.
Wow.
And then they showed the movie. And she didn't attend the movie, but she sold her books and talked to people and took pictures with people in the hall, and it was great. I thought it was.
Do we have a strong attendance?
There were a lot of people there, but it had sold out
twice,
because the tickets were free. And so then a lot of people didn't show because they didn't have skin in that game, I think, because they had to pay for the tickets. So so it was still well attended. There were still a lot of people there. But yeah, Temple noticed this, so she was telling me, like, you need to charge for tickets.
That's probably right. We didn't know what was going to happen, though. And the 200 at Mill Plain, that's just sold out in less than 48 hours. Right. And then we opened it up again, and they told us there were 536 seats in the theater, and there were only 483. And we had already filled 536 VPs, and so.
And I don't know if sending the email telling people, like warning them that there was a miscommunication, so it was overbooked, and first come, first serve had any effect, I'm not sure.
Well, I came first just because of that. We waited for a long time in line.
Yeah.
It's all right, but I was just saying that it was effective in some cases, at least in my case.
I think also with the particular families that we support, oftentimes there's a lot of, you don't know what's going to happen last minute, so
right.
It's a little harder to plan ahead of time sometimes.
That's true as well.
Did you hear how the Oregon one thing went? Mm-hmm. Where they were charging? Because that would be...
Well, that was $60.
I know, so that would be you'd have the, what's it called, in the pyramid, you have...
The control group?
Control group. Thank you.
We couldn't charge that.
No, I know, but I'm just wondering if that did make everyone...
7 or 5.
Five.
And we also had a very, very decent presentation, very well done as well.
Yeah, she did a...
I'm talking about you.
Oh, I did the introduction.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
was
good. Yeah,
good.
I tried to. All right, so we taped it with CBTV.
Oh, my
God. I haven't looked at it yet. It's dark.
Do we have it?
Yeah.
I did take a look at it. You can hear Dr. Grandin very well. You can see the slides. You can't see her.
But that's okay.
So, but you can see the presentation.
So we'll probably put it on the website so that people can, and I'll send it to the board so you can.
It's too bad there wasn't any discussion afterwards, but it was late.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a 5-hour afternoon for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I took off when the movie ended.
Yeah.
Did anybody in the audience attend, either one that would like to make a comment?
She is great. I didn't say the community as I'd seen her before, and I'd seen her years and years ago. It was great. I liked what she talked about with the children, that they're too focused on this and they're not working, or they're not expected to do as much as they used to be expected to do. So I hope that rang a bell with some people as well.
Mm-hmm. Our generation.
As a future wife of an engineer, I really appreciated her comments about that.
Is
he a nerd?
Well, I thought it was interesting that kids can't use rulers anymore. Yeah. That nobody's teaching them how to do stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I beg to differ. I've been buying one of those every single year for the last
elementary school. That's what I was going to say.
They're getting them every year, so they should be know how to use them.
We were just measuring in centimeters two or three weeks ago.
Because she was just really like she can.
But are they doing it in special education?
Sure. When or anyone? Sure. Are they going to still know what clockwise means eventually?
No. Yeah.
I would thought of that.
Let's hope it's in regular ed, not special ed.
Well,
learning how to use those things.
Mm-hmm. We just talked
skills,
to the
right?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is let's hope nobody's in special ed. Let's hope they're all in regular ed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that this was a good year from my perspective, at least. I only saw half of it, but it was once again gratifying to see the Heathland poll, to see the responses from folks.
Might have been a little over capacity again, but they were complaining to Matt Paul. He said, well, you had over 300 people, but it was the problem.
I was surprised because the last thing I went through, they weren't going to have a speaker. They were going to let all the presenters speak a little bit. And all of a sudden, there was a speaker there. So you guys made a last minute spot.
He happened to be, he's a national guy.
It was good. I was just always wondering. But that's something we used to think about. I don't know what you think about that. But rather than have a guest speaker, have each of those people who come every year say something a bit more, right? Mm-hmm. You know, 3 minutes instead of 15. You're going to get 15 total, but then you have actual, they put a lot of into this each year. It's kind of interesting. It would be nice to have each of those people up there, the Senate, I mean, the representatives, and our mayor, and all that, say something. That's what we intend to
do. I like the videos.
Yeah, it's that thing that well this year.
Really, put it in perspective, but
it's good. No, it's good. I enjoyed it.
Any other comments about the October event? Transit? We still have buses.
Thank you for that.
There'll probably be some fallout with the approval of the tax initiative license. Exactly what that is, we won't really know probably for another 6 months to a year, because what is going to be some of the victims of this lowered tax money is our programs like the special needs grants. And special needs grants are given that help dissuade some of the cost of C-band tickets and the C-band program, as an example. So, will eliminate service? No, can't happen. But it could be a situation where the long-term effects, not short-term in the next year, could be higher fares for that service. Just to kind of give you a perspective, the cost per passenger boarding, which is what the cost is, every time a passenger boards and uses C-band, as an example, is $55. The cost per passenger boarding, that's a one-way trip, for a fixed route, is about $7.50. Now, and then the cost that a customer pays is $1.80. So it doesn't take Einstein to quickly see where there's some concerns, and the reason why we used the special needs grants as a form of helping make that disparity less shocking. I don't know what it's going to be like this time next year, but it's going to be a little bit different. As far as fixed route, I know that I've been advocating for at least the last 5-10 years that more and more people should get on fixed route. And the reason being is, if we can divert people that can use fixed route for some or all of their trips, that saves money for those that can't. And that's where I'm coming from. Plus, one of the hallmarks of the ADA is to provide equal access. And I like the fact that we're saying to people with disabilities, you know what? We want you to have the same service as the non-disabled have. Now, we'll do things to help you with being able to access service, but it's almost like mainstreaming, educational mainstreaming as an example. There's good and some bad examples of it, but yesterday's vote is going to have an impact, but I can't tell you what exactly that will be. meeting. We are still working on the Mill Plain Bus Rapid Transit, and we're still looking at a variety of different ways to enhance service, but that's, it's the same old, same old. Maybe I'm getting too dang old.
Well, I don't know how the ADA is written. Can C-VAN bus passes be more expensive than C-TRAN bus passes? I know we don't do pass anymore, we do the hop card thing.
Technically speaking, under the ADA, ADA paratransit or ADA complimentary service can charge up to twice what it would cost on a fixed route. Most transits don't do that because there's also a parity issue of lower income folks and stuff like that. It could mean simple things like the alteration of what is called capping. And capping means that it's close to, similar to passes. Passes is a form of capping. We're saying that the cost of the monthly pass is roughly the equal to 33 trips per month. And so what happens is everything after that break-even point is free. Okay, so if you were to eliminate capping, then the price would be $1.80, or whatever the price of the tickets are, or one-way fares. There's discounts that are mandatory under the ADA on fixed route, but not for C-VAN. But so I've asked Mary for an executive session with the board following this, but I think she has an announcement.
I just wanted people to know that I'm retiring in December. So, yeah. So this is the last COVID meeting.
Oh,
stop that, darling.
Yeah, no. We're all speaking the same thing. Although we all thank God for you and all your service, the blessing you've been to so many people here.
Absolutely.
So,
anyway, that's all.
It's bittersweet.
It is.
Yeah, it's bittersweet.
Well, I love my job, so it is kind of bittersweet. But it's, I mean, there's a lot of good things that stay
over there. Yeah, no kidding. How can you get all sweet? Do we have any other issues that the board wants to raise before we go into executive session? Does anybody in the audience have any comments?
Peace is going to be hosting legislative teas. And I know that there's some on December the 9th, and I believe it's November the 22nd, but I walked off without that flyer, so I will send that information to Mary. So anybody is welcome to join those.
And are those in the afternoon?
Different times varying, depending upon the district and when we can get the representatives to commit to coming. We are going to probably send it out to, they will be on the website, and we're going to reach out to our rapid response teams as well as individuals that we think might be interested within those areas. So I probably will do a blast too.
Is it going to be a blast?
I might do a blast. We'll just see. Okay. See how big the coffee shop is we're going to.
So that'll include the venue then as well.
The what?
The venue, the venue.
Yes.
Any other things? Do I have a...
I saw the
move for adjournment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
If I can make sure that staff... everybody else get that.
Oh, my goodness.